From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
The Mission.
Excelsior.
Redwood City.
American Canyon.
San Francisco.
Vallejo.
I'm from Redwood City, so I guess that's in the peninsula.
Coming up, we'll find out what it's like to try to parent from inside prison.
Even though he's only 11, I don't want to lose him to the streets.
Then the life of an artist trying to create in tough economic times.
There's a balance between like being too comfortable and fearing that you're not going to have a place to live.
And we'll get the story behind this audiograph mystery sound.
That's a big piece of redwood.
This is
what the inside of the tree
looks like. Started in 909 A.D.
That tells you that's a 1930
year. 1930
itself. Learning lessons for a lifetime today on Cross Currents. On Sunday, families around the Bay Area will gather to celebrate Father's Day. Being a dad is hard work, and it's even harder to do from inside prison walls. It's something many of the reporters at the San Quentin Prison Report know about.
The San Quentin Prison Report.
Bringing you hidden stories from life inside.
In order to make something grow, you gotta own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
'Cause I like to be free, I like to move about the land.
You can hear a pin drop.
From the San Quentin Prison Report, Jason Jones brings us the story of incarcerated fathers trying to parent from inside prison.
The things that play on my mind and weigh on my heart is that I'm not there for my daughters physically.
Gabe Robeson has been gone for 17 years.
I'm not there to protect them. I'm not there to walk them down the aisle at their wedding. I'm not there to put up the deposit for their house. I'm not there to do the things I'm supposed to be there to do as a dad.
Gary was an active father prior to his incarceration. However, Jamar Smith, who's been incarcerated 11 years, had no idea he was a father and struggles with creating that bond with his son.
I was in the county jail. My son was being born. I didn't have a chance to meet him until he was 7 years old.
Jerome Boone has been gone for 9 years and finds himself somewhere in the middle of Gary and Jamar. Jerome says he was around his kids, but didn't take advantage of their time together.
It was a good experience being there every day with them. That's something I miss.
Being a father in prison means trying to find a way to raise your kids with limited contact.
We're all trying to squeeze in time for each other. You know, my daughter wants her individual time. My son wants his, you know, and then they're almost battling for that time slot when really I'm trying to give it to them. You know, I have stuff planned out for them.
Visiting is allowed on Saturday and Sunday from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. The average visit usually lasts 3 to 4 hours. So even if your kid comes every other weekend, it can still feel like no time at all.
It's a roller coaster, man, for I think all of us.
My daughter, she wants to be held. My son wants to be held. But at the same time, it's just 3 to 4 hours isn't enough, man.
Jerome's family comes all the way from Southern California, and the distance makes a hard situation even harder.
3 months leading up to the visit, I'm always trying to think of something, you know, a nugget I can share with them, something I could teach them. You know, for the next visit when they come. But I come to realize it really don't work that way, man. You know, I can't just sit them down, put them through my process. They're gonna put me through their process, you know, as far as if they wanna play, we gotta play. You know, if they wanna talk, then we got time to talk.
Jamar's 11-year-old son comes from just as far, but he's only visited with his dad 3 times.
We don't have that interaction as father and son. He's more in tune with the other families in the visiting room. I can't lie, it's real hurtful, and I have jealous feelings when I see my son laughing and smiling with people he don't even know, and I want him to be engaging with me.
What Jamar seeks from his son, he actually finds in his stepson.
I met my stepson, Devion, when he was 5 years old in the visiting room, and we had an instant connection as father and son. This is hard to say, but when I'm with Devion, I forget that I have a real biological son.
It's clear that Jamar's absence affected his relationship with his son. But Gary lucked up and is serving time at a prison that's close to his kids. But that's not saying much because even though his little girls come every other weekend, problems still arise with time constraints.
We can really do nothing but scratch the surface and talk about things that's just how your job, how is school going.
you know, what you eat, what you've been doing, what movies you've seen, what songs. We just do the surface things. It's no intimacy. It's like just a couple hours and then they're gone.
Another way these dads stay in touch with their children is through collect calls. Having a job or being assigned to school can be beneficial because you're allowed one 15-minute collect call every day. Otherwise, you get one per month. For Gary, these phone calls are tough.
It seemed like after a while, to me, it gets empty. It's just a lot of talk, a lot of talk, a lot of talk. I'm not doing nothing. I don't have any action. I'm not there for them physically. I'm not there to solve their problem.
If Jerome is lucky, he sees his family 4 times a year. So he has to use his phone time to raise his kids, and sometimes those conversations can be tricky.
I tell them to look at me and look at their mother, you know, and the troubles that we've been through, through drug use, incarceration, just the overall street life. You know, even the fact that I have to talk to them over this phone, you know, being recorded, is just, you know, life is a mess through our mistakes. You know, and I tell them to look at me as an example of the good and the bad.
Because of their strained relationship, it's even more difficult for Jamar to get his son to take his advice.
I don't think he's receptive. It's just like, yeah, okay, whatever. You've never been here. You don't know. And I'm not listening to you.
Now, being away from your child, the amount of time these fathers have can take a toll on both ends, especially when it comes to moments in your child's life where your kid expects you to be there, like the first day of school or birthdays. Jamar even sends his son cards and letters and tries to call him on his birthday, but he says he knows it's not enough.
He's not excited because he knows it's only a 15-minute phone call, and he gets tired of the beeping noise on the phone. And he wants to go out to, you know, Chuck E. Cheese or Magic Mountain. He wants the latest gadgets, new shoes, and I'm not able to provide for him like that.
Jerome missed his oldest son's graduation. However, he was able to invite his son to his own college graduation inside a prison.
I felt like it was his day almost. You know, he was happy and excited, and I was so grateful to let him see what's going on in here as well. You know what I mean? As far as the community in here. I was proud, you know, for him being there. I wanted to show him off too, you know, so it was a win-win all around, you know.
But no matter how involved you are as a dad, there's still a fear that your kid will follow in your footsteps.
Now she's going to the clubs. I don't want her dealing with the same kind of guys that, like me. She don't understand the things that can happen.
Even though he's only 11, I don't want to lose him to the streets.
Due to resentencing laws, Jerome was released early and is now home with his family. But before he paroled, he had a few choice words.
Jerome, Ariana, I love you, my babies. Nathaniel, I'm so proud of you. You know, you're doing well. I just can't wait to be out there with you.
From San Quentin State Prison, I'm Jason Jones with SQPR.
Prayed on my arrival being a blink of an eye. Until then, I write letters till my ink runs dry. Sincerely yours, love, daddy.
That story was produced by San Quentin Prison Report's Jason Jones. The report is a project between KLW, San Quentin Reporters, and Nigel Poor. For more information and stories, go to KALW.org and click on Cross Currents.
Dear son, I'm glad to hear you're doing good, that made me happy. I got your last letter, good luck, you're forgetting at me. I read it front to back, plus your picture really grabbed me. Look at young Josh, a spitting image of his daddy. Appreciate the flowers on the grave for your granny. I wish I would have met you once.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Darlene Jane Oni Asele is an artist and illustrator. She grew up in a small town in New York State, but her artwork explores the excitement of urban life. These days, she's drawing inspiration from the city of Oakland, where she's based. She sat down with KALW's Jen Cheehan to talk about her work.
You say in your artist statement that your work concentrates primarily on the shifting urban landscape. So what does that mean to you?
To me, I take these walks around my neighborhood when I'm walking my dog, and I like to explore. And the urban landscape is one that's always in flux. There are buildings going up, there are buildings going down, there's graffiti going up, there's graffiti going down. And it goes through various cycles of cleanliness and activity. And I like to kind of take note of those and do a lot of documentation. So I'm always with a camera. Now that cameras are your phone, that's also, you know, something that I do. I'm always snapping pictures and kind of using those as reference points for my work.
And in your artist statement, you say that you employ a vast catalog of visual notes and memories to create your work. How do you organize this vast catalog of memories and visual notes?
Mostly, I have a memory like a seal trap. So I'm thinking about things all the time and really recalling from my card catalog brain different
like moments that you see or people that you run
across, like pop culture, literary references, and the way that that ties into the things that I see. And then for those other times when there's way too much stuff, I always carry a sketchbook. So I sketch on BART, which, and, you know, kind of put that up on Instagram. So I'm constantly kind of visually journaling. And then I also use my phone notes, which I think is really great too. Like, that's another thing. And not only do I have the photographs in there, but I have notes of like little snippets of things that I'll think of when I'm sleeping or when I'm walking or what have you.
So you mentioned Instagram and using your phone a lot. You have a very active Instagram account, and you have pictures of your artworks in progress and beautiful views of the city at different times, just candid shots of you and your dog hanging out.
I love my dog.
Your dog's very cute, thank by you. The way. So how does the internet and social media intersect with your art practice?
For a very, very long time, I was anti-social media, simply because I didn't quite get it, and it felt very private in a lot of ways, and so it seemed very like kind of a touch narcissistic and a touch exposed. But over the years, I've really grown to love it, and especially Instagram. I think that it's a really great way as an artist to show people the humanity behind artwork. So a lot of the times I'm not putting up finished, perfect pictures on Instagram. I'm doing stuff when I'm working in the studio or late nights, and I'll have like little notes. So it's kind of interesting to me as a so-called or self-proclaimed private person. I will share a lot of things that are going on. I think the other night I was like, I'm having insomnia. This is what I'm doing. Because I think it really humanizes my work, and it gives people a different sense of what it makes, what it means to be an artist and a creator, which I think is really important to have that level of authenticity where you're really showing like the different facets of your life. Because a lot of times there's like this artificial sense of like polish.
About just seeing the finished
just
work.
Just seeing the finished work and thinking that that springs from, it just springs naturally. Artists create work and it's perfect and everything's great. So I like to for people to see the build-up.
In the in-between stages.
Yes.
And do you think about your audience for that, your Instagram or your social media audience, as the same as your audience for the finished work?
That's a really good question. I have found that with Instagram especially, the people that I am sharing and meeting are other artists from all over. And so, and one of the best things for me in recent times has been meeting a lot of people from the Bay Area in real life and becoming like real life personal Facebook friends with them, or having show opportunities that go either way. Like if I know something and I know that their work is perfect and I've kind of gotten to know them, being able to pass on opportunities and vice versa.
I'm speaking with Oakland-based artist and illustrator Darlene Onyesele. So Darlene, because of your social media activity, you said that you've been gathering a community of artists mm-hmm. that are here in the Bay Area. So do you feel like that sense of community is being threatened? There have been some high-profile gallery closures in the past few years, and we live in a very challenging time economically and demographically in mm-hmm. the whole region, but Oakland especially, San Francisco especially, but where you live, Oakland, mm-hmm. are you feeling that in terms of the artistic community?
On a very personal level, yes. It's something that I think about a lot. So, for example, when you have the freedom financially to live without the risk of, like, being kicked out of your space, whether it's a studio space. Like, I don't have a studio space because, like, for economic reasons right now.
So you work out in
my
home.
I work out of my home. And the idea that of, like, being displaced from my home because I've lived there for so long is something that affects the way that I work and the way that I think about work. You know, that can be a little bit stifling at times when I'm worried, like, should I be really thinking about, like, the fine art end and making, like, paintings or doing personal work that might not sell, but it's an important message that I need to get out there. But at the same token, at certain points, a level of, like, complacency and comfort makes for not very rich work. So when you think of all of the things that came out of strife and war and displacement and economic fluctuations like punk rock or postmodern stuff, there's a balance between, like, being too comfortable and fearing that you're not going to have a place to live. So that's something that I think about a lot, and it's not necessarily resolved, but I'm trying to kind of take the more, like, punk rock route where I'm like, okay, I'm feeling a lot of stress economically. I'm going to try to channel that into my work. I think that recently I've been really trying to bring to light the idea that of artists not really getting paid for their work, to hopefully create a culture of artists being able to afford to do what they do, because it's a skill that takes years to develop. It's important. Art and design is all around us. We as artists need to kind of band together and say that we're not going to work for pennies. And then that'll create a culture that will be able to, I think, support us.
Like this. Hit it.
That was Oakland artist Darlene Jane Oni Asele. She spoke with KLW's Jen Chien. Her work is on display right now at Art Attack SF in San Francisco through June 19th and at Pro Arts Gallery in Oakland through June 27th. Find all the details online at klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
Today we have one of my favorite Audiograph stories, and just in time for Father's Day, this one is about families of trees. I went to meet up with a man who spends his weekends teaching people about the redwoods and what they can teach us about living a long life.
My name is Dan Chen, and we are at the Millwood National Monument. I'm a volunteer here.
Good morning, everyone. The redwood here is called coarse redwood. It is the tallest living thing on earth.
People here, they all smile all the time, and when you're walking in the city, everybody is so serious. So it's nice to have a break.
The tree is 200, 300 foot tall. Make a guess how deep the root is. Only 10 feet. But how can it stand a tree 200, 300 foot tall? Spread in all directions and hold hand with the root from the tree nearby. So you will see most of the tree here, they are surrounded by their grandparents, their grandchild. it also lived for like 1,000 years old. So can we learn from the redwood to live a long life? First of all, it stand tall. Secondly, drink lots of water. The third thing is surrounded by your family. The fourth thing is extended to the community. And the most important of all, to live a long life is to have thick skin. Thank you very much.
What's your favorite part of the talk you give people?
Well, it's the thick skin, because my skin is very thin. Like, you know, when I give a talk, and sometimes people doesn't have enough patience, or particularly in the winter time, it's very cold. They don't want to stand here for 10 minutes and they leave, and I get hurt. And so I have to learn to feel that it doesn't matter. Even I have only two people, I still continue my talk with the same kind of enthusiastic. Yeah. And so that's what I'm working on right now. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan. If you want to learn more about those thousand-year-old trees, head to Muir Woods. And keep your ears open. If there's a sonic treasure hunt you want to send me on, give me a call and tell me all about it. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. It's always so great to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. We always love to hear from you, the listener. You make us what we are, public radio. And if you want to hear more from us, subscribe to our podcast, The Bridge. It features the best of the best from Cross Currents with a new episode every week. Do not miss it. You can find it at kalw.org/subscribe. Our team includes Bonnie Chan, Jürgen Klemm, Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Lucy Kang, Justine Lee, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, James Rollins, Raja Shah, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.
Hey everybody, this is W. Kamau Bell, host of the new live talk show, Kamau Right Now. Perhaps you're wondering what it sounds like.
Oh yeah, no, of course. Every time that I do anything as a white person, that's when the racists inform me that I'm masquerading as white, but I'm actually Jewish.
The thing I find about a chief of police resigning is that you gotta get a new chief of police. And they tend to only pick police to be chief of police, instead of my hope that they would pick just like a really old black lady. You know what I mean? Just like... So what do you guys think? Is there hope?
Yes, there's hope. We are always going to start sentences without knowing exactly where they're going to go.
Well, we've got more for you.